Okay, we are out of executive session at 7:01. Next up, can we please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay. Next up is the agenda. We actually have there's an addendum on there, and I just have a list of a couple of changes to the agenda. On the addendum, if you look on your addendum, it's on the back page. The paid leave approval, remove that from your agenda. The one for Mr. Ash. Okay, everybody get that? Okay, on the superintendent items, we go back there. You have one?
I don't think I put it on the
camera. Okay, on the superintendent items for the supplemental contracts, remove the very last one, Lori Robinson, for MHS track. And then the last one, if you go back to the addendum, I apologize, on the back page, it should say Catherine Wacker is retiring and not resigning. Okay. So that is the agenda and the addendum. Was there any other changes?
Nothing.
If not, I need a motion to accept the agenda and the addendum and then the changes as stated, please.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Levy.
Yes.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up, I need a motion to accept Pam McCracken as the December 2012 Classified Employee of the Month, please.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Diane.
Okay, Pam. Okay, well, I'll read about Pam. Pam is being honored as the Employee of the Month, and then we have everyone give their input on why she's nominated and received that award. Pam is awesome with the students. She is wonderful to work with and friendly to everyone. Pam goes above and beyond for her students, and she is caring and has a good sense of humor. So that's why she's being honored this month as our Employee of the Month. So we'll make sure she gets her gift card as well.
What is her position?
She's an MHA or MBA at Navin. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, then, any other discussion on that? Hearing none, then I need a roll call.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries, and thank you to Pam for the work that she does for us. Next up, we have the Bunsell Middle School tonight.
Yay.
They're presenting Common Core.
When we decided what we wanted to tell you about our work this year, because I'm a slacker, we decided it would be easy to have some of the staff members talk about each of the departments. So we have, because, you know, we like to make videos, so we have a little video. There's a limited amount of music.
Are you singing on this video?
There's no singing, okay. But I am acting. So.
Okay.
We'd like you to watch it, then we'll answer any questions you have.
The standards changed. I just opened up this one.
Gotta get the new standards. I don't understand how this close reading is supposed to be a student's deeper understanding.
Okay, so for Common Core, you're just gonna get me a new textbook, right? So I can just get rid of this one, right? New textbook.
Common Core. Wait, they're not called career and college readiness standards? Jeez, and I just got a new tap for that.
I know you said we need to work on our Common Core, and that's exactly what I'm doing. 458, 459.
Everybody's got to be ready next year. Got to get ready.
The math department has been working on curriculum maps to align to the Common Core. And I would say we're kind of at least 50% of the way through writing those. But the more important question that we've been asking ourselves is how are we going to deliver the material? Because I think that's the biggest change between what we taught before and what we're teaching next year. Common Core doesn't want kids to just learn on the surface. It wants them to dive deeper into the understanding of the concepts. And so finding a way to deliver that material is probably the one thing that, and to align it to the mathematical practices. There are 8 of those, and we're being held accountable to those as well. So finding the ways to deliver the material in a way that aligns with the mathematical practices and has kids dig deeper into the content, that's what I think we've really been talking about, is how can we teach this in a better way.
The middle school science department has been preparing for a change in standards for about 3 years. At that point, we worked out a plan of transition. In the meantime, but especially in the past 12 months, we have written new learning targets, enduring understandings, and essential questions to fit these new standards. We continuously work to ensure that our learning targets are student-friendly and meet the challenging expectations of these new standards. Next year, we will fully implement the new standards.
The Language Arts Department has been incredibly deliberate in our approach to transitioning to the Common Core. We've investigated other districts' designs to fully understand the instructional shifts, to create what's best for our department and what's best for the kids here from school.
We've done a lot of work to prepare for next year. The social studies standards actually came out in 2010. They were approved. So as a department, 7th and 8th grade decided we would go ahead and shift because at the same time, they also got rid of our Ohio Achievement Assessment. So we didn't see any reason to hold back, and we thought whatever they do, or if they do bring back another assessment, that we'll be ahead of the curve. So we've actually been developing our maps now for a little while, and this is our 3rd year teaching the new standards. As far as our work continuing, right now what we're really working on is really scaffolding our learning targets and making sure that we're building kids to a higher level of thinking. We're also now just starting the process of very purposely including the ELA standards actually in our curriculum map.
The Internet Specialist at the middle school has been able to have an inclusion model that allows us to work with regular ed teachers and co-teach in language arts and in math. This model has allowed us to work with the departments at developing maps and at looking at the standards and the model curriculum in order to address the needs of our students. We have then been able to go in and differentiate instruction that meets the needs of all the students in the class, but also will be in line with the curriculum.
The extended standards are truly just an extension of the Common Core. The format is very similar. We have the strands and the gradients and the topics and the skills that we're supposed to work on with the kids. They are actually broken down into 3 complexities, so we have different ladders. These are the ladder steps we can take with the kids, which is really nice, so that we can take them up or down as they need to. So it really is just the same thing as the Common Core, but for our special ed population. Right now we are implementing them in our content classes. So I teach math and social studies. So every day in math, we take one part of the class and the students are in construction with the lesson. So the kids are really getting exposed to a lot of new skills that they never would have before. But I think it's great because they're actually showing us things that we didn't think they were able to do. So we're exposing them to more, and they're showing us and impressing us with new things we can do. Concerns for me are that we have a short amount of time, especially before our August assessment, and we have to test them on all of this stuff. So I'm taking one skill a day, and we're just going through one skill a day. So that's all the exposure my kids are getting in math right now, is just that one skill.
Decreasing the number of standards that we have to teach. Right now, we teach so many standards that we only can just brush the surface, and then we have to move on because we have so many other things we need to cover. Now we can really have kids understand why they're doing what they're doing and really look for real-life applications outside of the classroom. I would say the other thing that we're excited about is the delivery. Having kids discover what they're learning and really argue with kids about why it is the way it is or why it's not the way someone thinks it is, and really have those conversations, I think that's exciting for education and for the math department to move forward.
The department is most excited about a narrower focus of topics, which allows for more in-depth study. We're excited to see students gain a deeper understanding
of these science concepts. This will be accomplished through more hands-on, inquiry-based activities and lessons. The focus will be on higher levels of learning in each content area, and we foresee students enjoying these changes as well.
One thing that we're excited about with the new standards is the focus on higher comprehension skills and the focus on the role of argument in reading and writing. But what we're most excited about is the new standards push students, all students, to be more reflective, more analytical, and more critical in their thought process. Some of the things we're really excited about are the ability to really make social studies relevant. That's something that we've worried about. And so being able to focus on those other strands of economics, geography, and government have really allowed us to become more relevant. We also think there's a lot more opportunity for those 21st century skills in the new standards. So project-based learning, collaborative group work, and also working interdisciplinary with language arts is something that we've started working on and that we hope to continue working on.
Our biggest fear is that with their Common Core, that some of the skills that the students will be expected to know are too difficult for some of the students. So that will really come into play when it comes to planning lessons and really differentiating the lessons we already have in place as well as developing new lessons. Math is not the same as it used to be 10, 20 years ago. It is so different. So we really need to... One, let go of those old ways, but two, I would say the other thing that we're nervous about is finding the questions that really get kids to think. Not just the surface level, the knowledge base, or maybe one level, but it's way deeper and getting them to understand what they're doing and why they're doing it, and really think. The biggest challenge for us will be in having materials and supplies in order to meet these new in-depth learning standards. We will need to complete more labs and use more technology. Our departments will need additional funds and supplies to ensure that we are meeting the state's cognitive demands. The 8th grade has written a grant to hopefully relay some of these costs. Common Core anchor standards for reading and writing will ask that our students do more purposeful reading and writing within our classrooms. While we feel we already incorporate many nonfiction reading strategies into our classrooms, we know that we will need the help and support of our language arts colleagues in order to ensure that our students are developing 21st century skills in reading and writing, as well as communication, in order to succeed in their colleges and careers. One of our challenges is to increase text complexity, and this is problematic because some of the texts we've considered have the appropriate lexile, but really lack substance. On the other hand, some complex texts lack relevancy. They're just irrelevant for the kids today. So our challenge is we are on the hunt to find texts that are complex and relevant and provocative for middle-level students without filtering from the high school. I think our biggest fear is that as we try to really meet the expectations of the state and of the district, that at the same time we keep in mind that at the end of the day it's about what's best for kids. And so every time we have the discussions about what we need to do, move forward and do what's expected, we always are also having the discussion about, is this really what's best for all the kids in our classroom and help them have a better future? The biggest thing that we're excited about is that we really are excited to work with the teachers and to develop new lessons as well as new materials that will not only engage the students, but will be on a more independent level for them as well as be in line with the Common Core.
We really haven't seen it all the way through. We think it's done. Do you have questions for us? Because we wanted to really be honest about not just saying, here are the maps, this is what we've done, but what the things I think that Michelle and I have tried to support this year is not only having them, all our teachers, feel comfortable with the standards, but be ready to really put them into practice next year. And I think the discussions that we've had and the way we've leveraged our professional development to support not only just the knowledge of that, but what does that look like? And I feel like they all did. And I just asked them, I said, these are your three questions. You come up with what you think. And so they were pretty frank. And there were some themes. I hope that we are moving kids to 21st century thinking and then that we're more excited than we are scared, but that we were pretty frank about some of the things that concern them, that it is going to look different. And And even the beginning was facing our fears a little bit of, what is out there and how are we going to do it. So do you have questions for us?
Actually, I had a question, and I don't remember which teacher brought it up, but it talks about, as you move to the Common Core, some of the things that I guess falls on the board's feet is providing some of those materials and technology, and I saw that someone had written a grant for something.
They got it too.
Oh, yeah. Did they?
Yeah, they did.
So what's that going to, what does that provide?
It was there are a couple shifts in 7th and 8th grade, a little different content than they had before, and they want to do more of experiential and that kind of, they just needed supplies and it was a lot of things that we can reuse too. I mean, they right. just had like, and it seems stupid, but 25 stopwatches, then enough mm-hmm. for everybody to do. I mean, they were not huge ticket items, but they were just things that now I can organize a lab with a whole class and do that kind of thing. So they were pretty thoughtful about it and pretty excited. I think it was like, I want to say $1,500. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just sent us a letter, so maybe you haven't gotten it.
We'll pretend that these two aren't sitting
okay.
here when I ask
yes.
you this. But
yes.
are you equipped for next year
yeah.
for what you need for your lab work and do that kind of thing?
Truly, yeah. I think we are. I think science was, they feel like that's the place that they want to make sure with some of the shifts that they have the stuff. I mean, but the nice thing is that, and we've had these discussions about really how do you implement it? Is it stuff that you need, or mm-hmm. and for the most part, it isn't stuff. Stuff sort of helps, mm-hmm. but it isn't what drives it. I mean, it's like Katie; it's not a book. A book isn't going to help us.
I thought it was a great explanation. To be honest with you, of what the Common Core is, and for people like us who really aren't in that every day to kind of mm-hmm. understand. It's more deep than wide, and so mm-hmm. I think. Those challenges. I imagine it challenges every one of your teachers as well because now, it's like when I do my kid, you help my kids or used to help them with their homework, all of a sudden, you're getting down into places where you may not have gotten, you had to go in quite some time.
And truly, that's some of the things I think we tried to do to support them about, like last week we read an article on deeper questioning. What does that look like? If you want kids to think deeply, how do you engage them in that? And so that's what we've hoped with our professional development that we've looked at formative instructional practices and clear learning targets so that we support the operational part of it then next year.
Gotcha.
Is there a way we can get access to that? Because there's a lot there. I'd love to watch it.
I'll ask her. I'd like to thank Jody and Tom. It's just like magic. Here it is. They showed me how to run
where's the start button?
Video. I took the videos and then gave them to them.
There's some pretty good presentations that come out of your building.
That's true. And I'm surrounded by creative people. I'll ask her if she'll post it on YouTube, and I'll send you the link.
That'd be great.
But again,
I would even offer to post that up on our district website. I mean, if someone just wanted to go in and take 10 minutes, just kind of see what that's
like. Because, the beginning mm-hmm. is me having
fun. It's the price you pay for fame.
I think we could actually attach it to our next update. You know how we do that in service and PD updates.
I think that would be great.
It would be a good thing to send home to parents.
I just think it was very good explanation.
You
did a great job.
She got new pajamas. Okay.
All right. Was there anything else? Okay. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you. Great job.
All right. Next up, Mr. Ader is going to talk about transportation.
Let me pull off this presentation.
All right.
I'll just do a little segue. Last month, we talked about transportation quite a bit, and I said that I would have someone come forward and show us kind of where transportation has been and where we are now and some of the savings that's been recognized out of that department.
It's a pleasure to be here. I'm going to give you a copy of good stuff if you don't mind.
We love handouts. That's it. There's one thing this board likes. It's handouts.
Piles of them everywhere.
I've
been asked to give an overview of the transportation department.
Thank you.
What it's comprised of, the efficiencies related to it, costs, and so forth. So,
do that in short order, and then you're going to be busy.
Initially, let's go over just kind of the staffing and the vehicles that comprise the department. We've got 41 school buses in our fleet. 31 of those we're using for daily routes. Of those 31, 4 are special ed. And we have a total of 6 special ed buses in the fleet. We have 8 vans. About 4 of them are special ed vans, actually dedicated to special ed use. You can't use vans for student transportation unless it's for special ed purposes, other than field trips. So we do have 1 wheelchair van as well, and we have a pickup truck. The staff consists of 1 supervisor, 1 secretary, 31 regular drivers. We have 8 substitutes. They all come in handy, believe me. 4 regular ed, or 4 special regular employees that are special ed aides on each of our special ed buses. And we have 2 substitute aides and an additional substitute van driver, 2 full-time mechanics to handle all 41 vehicles, plus the others. And mechanics also assist with maintaining the maintenance vehicles and receiving truck and so forth, so they're a busy bunch. I want to go through some numbers for you. I put them together from a history perspective from fiscal year 05 through the last fiscal year. Give you a chance to see kind of the changes in structure and the way the district has operated. Fiscal year 05, we were running 30 buses. These are regular ed buses now. In addition, there were 4 special ed buses running at the same time. I differentiate special ed because you don't have much flexibility with those. You're required by law to transport special ed students, and the number of buses you run depends on the number you have that need to be transported. We reached a high in fiscal year 07 of 36, and are now down to running 27 regular ed buses, so we're quite proud of what Amy Morgan's been able to do in reducing the number of buses, carrying more students on each, which makes for a more efficient operation. The mileage, you notice, has gone up the last 3 years, and that's primarily because we're running vans to Columbus every day. So that van mileage on top of the bus mileage has boosted the total miles that we're driving on an annual basis, as well as a daily basis.
And why are we running that van to Columbus?
They're special ed vans.
Right.
We have 1 child that goes to the School of the Deaf. And we have some other kids that go to some other special ed Hoglund school and some autistic programs and things like that in Columbus.
Gotcha. Thank you. Yeah.
Number of students we're transporting on a daily basis through all those years. We have a total number of, we have about 3,550 students eligible for transportation in the district. And of those, right now we're transporting a little over 2,100, all K through 12.
Is our funding based on that number?
Yes, to a degree. Well, it used to be.
Right.
The state's not giving us anything anymore. So,
I mean, we do a T.
We're self-funded.
Right. We do a T1 report, though. Is our?
We do 2 reports to the state. A T1 report, which is a student count, mileage, bus assignments, and numbers of buses, those kinds of things. Then we do a T2 report, and that comes, accounts are taken the first week in October, and we report them, and then you have till, I think, sometime in January or early February to make corrections on that report. And at the end of the year, usually by the end of July and early August, you submit what's called a T2 report, which is a financial cost report. And those numbers, we wait till then because the treasurer hadn't had an opportunity to compile the year's numbers for that to be reported. Then those 2 reports combined, the state uses to see whether we're doing what we're supposed to be doing or not. But you can see we're transporting quite a few kids. And that's over 140 square miles of the district, too. So that's part of the reason the mileage is up as well. This is kind of a key number. It's the cost of a regular ed bus a year. It includes all staff-related costs, including mechanics and support staff. It also includes repairs and tires and tubes and insurance and all those other get fuel, which is, you know, a major driver in our costs. The number for last year went up. There are three main reasons for that. First one is fuel costs, clearly went up by a sizable amount, and we have no control over that. We had converted several. The previous years we'd been running substitute drivers on full-time routes. You kind of reach the end of the road with that. You really have to convert them to regular drivers. And that conversion took place, which adds to your personnel and staffing costs. Plus, we reduced the number of buses, as I showed you, to 27. So out of your total cost, which really didn't go up that, you know, by a sizable amount, your cost per bus looks a little larger. So, but when you're talking about any kinds of modifications in transportation that affect total costs, this is the number you want to look at. Because the only really effective way to do that is to take buses off the road if you want to reduce costs. We're kind of at a level where we can't transport the kids we've got to transport with any fewer buses. One of the reasons we run two tiers, which means we run middle school, high school early in the morning, and then we run K through 6 in the second round, and the start times are such that where allows us to do that, is you can run fewer buses to that and carry more students each day per bus. Okay? So that's the reason you do it, and that's why it's more effective to do that than to run all of them at the same time.
So if you bus K-8, you'd have to put more buses on the road.
That's correct.
At $61,000 a shot.
That or $55,000 to $60,000, yes, somewhere in there. So as you can see, you're looking at, you know, a couple buses as long as an additional cost. Plus, you still got the same 140 square miles to cover.
Yeah, that doesn't get any smaller, does it?
It doesn't get any smaller, and the distribution of students doesn't really vary because of the grades either. So, special ed cost per year, we're pretty proud of this. Way back when, we were running well over $140,000 a year for a special ed bus. We've got it down to a very manageable level. The cost is higher than a regular ed bus. You've got two people on that bus instead of one with an aide. So that kind of, you know, tells you what the difference is. The annual total cost for transportation.
I'm sorry, can you go back to that last slide? How is it that the cost from 05 to 12 dropped by almost 80%? Well, I shouldn't say about 40%. It's almost cut in half. Not this slide, the slide before.
I know, you're testing my
hand. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
You want to use my handout?
No.
Okay. How did that cost get down? So, I mean, that's a significant drop.
I don't know, because I didn't get here till FY07. And by that time, we were rerouted.
Right.
Because we had buses running helter-skelter. Tried to manage the grades that those buses carry in such a way that it's more effective. And, you know, so by doing that, and Amy's has been a very good router and has created quite a bit of efficiencies and has managed to do that. We're pretty proud of that.
That's a pretty amazing slide right there, I'll tell you that.
At least all of them are that way. It's just four buses, but still, it's an achievement. What did I do?
Sorry, I messed up the whole presentation.
Nope, there we go. Last slide. Total costs. I want to point out, see, we had some rough years in there where we were doing a variety of things because of financial situations. We were cutting here and there and adding here and there and changing. And one of those years, the two higher cost years, was a year where we were running a single tier, all buses at pretty much the same time. Since that fiscal year 08, the department costs have been reduced by around $300,000 per year. So we managed to get
about $1.4 million total savings for the district over that time.
Wow.
So we're pretty proud of that.
As well you should be, yeah. It's wonderful.
So, you know, that's, in addition to that, I will mention training of the driving staff and the department staff has been dramatically improved. And part of the results of that, as you can see, we have discipline referrals from the buses. And I know when I first got here, they were astronomical. And they refer everything, like chewing gum and this and that. And that we've got that down to the place where it's gone from 1,500 to about 300 a year, which is much more manageable and gives the building principal something with meat to work with and real problems to deal with. So, you know, we're proud of that, too. So that's my presentation. I tried to keep it kind of short. Do you have any questions? Thank you.
If we go down to a state mandated level in transportation and we adjust it that we pick up the K through 8 all at the same time instead of two routes, adjust our schedule, isn't that going to save us money?
No.
Why not?
Because you're not going to lose any buses. You're going to have maybe even more.
So unless you're eliminating high school.
Eliminating high school, you run them all on one tier, K through 8. You're still covering 140 square miles. So you're going to have kids on buses rather than an hour or less, up to as much as 2 hours. So the time's going to be there and the number of buses are going to be there.
Right. So what if you go to, what takes place in cluster if we run two shifts, but we do a cluster, are we able to cut down on that?
With high schoolers?
With the routes. No. If we eliminate and go to state mandated busing level and we do cluster stops, and you keep it on two, but you're not...
You're just going to fewer places?
Anything? Yeah.
It's hard to project, frankly. We did that with high schoolers a few years ago. You know, it's very hard to manage. And the difference with high schoolers is you're not mandated to carry them, and they don't have to. So a lot of them, instead of going to... We had like seven stops in the entire district. Instead of parents taking their kids there, they just drove them to school or got them a car. K through 8 is a whole different story because you have to transport
right.
that.
Right.
So, you know, you're talking about a lot more clusters. Because you've got to keep the stop down to the number of students that you can manage. And you don't want too many buses coming to the same stop. You've got mass confusion trying to manage that at that point in time. So, you know, we're at the point, you know, I understand where you're coming from. The efficiencies here and the cost structure here has been driven down to the point that as long as we're busing this district, we can't go much lower in terms of reducing the number of buses that we're putting on the road. And it's, you know, transportation's kind of a traditional place for districts to look to make cuts, but you're at a difficult point to do that right now. Does that help?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anybody else?
I just appreciate the work you guys have done over there, which you've improved in the service.
Thank you. I won't take credit for it. I'll give credit to Mrs. Morgan and the drivers and the rest of the staff. They've done a phenomenal job.
Yes, they certainly have done
a
phenomenal job.
We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, great. Thank you very much. It's going to get lost. All right, next up on the agenda is the superintendent's report.
Okay, a couple things. I know that on the district website we gave a little recognition, but definitely want to recognize once again the Elks of Marysville donated dictionaries to every third grade student in our district. So before Christmas break, they spent time delivering those, and so special thank you to them for that generous donation. Kermit Morris and I met at the beginning of the year. Sounds like this is something he's done on a pretty regular basis. So I know the kids were super excited. I was able to be there a couple times to receive those, so I appreciate that. Also, I sent out to you today, I don't know if you all received that, kind of a spreadsheet of different items. as we work through reductions, I thought this might be a good page to work from and for me to kind of update you as we move through different positions and restructuring. Specifically, tonight, we talk about the Unified Arts a little bit. We've had a series of meetings with different areas. We've met with music twice, and we are almost there. We still have some shifting around to do at the intermediate, middle, and high school level with the instrumental music, but we are very close with the restructuring of that. In loose terms at this point, it includes three teachers being at the elementary, and then 5.5 from 5th grade to 12th grade coverage. So they're still trying to work out covering the bands at different levels and trying to get that set to stone and a schedule sharing those across. But we are close. Art department, we've met, and that schedule is done. There will be two teachers at the high school, two teachers at the middle school, one at Creekview, and then three shared by the elementary. So the art group was very collaborative, reached a schedule. We even have teachers assigned to buildings, and so all in all, that part of that piece is done. Let's see, guidance was another area that we've already had one initial meeting with. And kind of had two proposals in the works that either one could work. We're just kind of trying to balance numbers and look at projections, but that one will be wrapped up pretty quickly as well. PE and nurses, those meetings are next week, on both of them, I believe, on Tuesday. So, and the music, we have another meeting scheduled, I believe it's next week, so those pieces are kind of falling together. The teachers and principals have worked very hard, and it's been a difficult conversation, but really the conversation has centered around really that K-12 focus and accepting that, you know, what we've done traditionally, we just can't provide all of that anymore, which has been difficult, hard conversations, but they're doing great work and been pleased with how that's pushed through. Did you have questions on what I sent you today as far as a framework for discussion? But that kind of updates you on those areas. We have, I guess when we'll get to the other part of the agenda, some of the positions we've talked about. We have received some resignations, so it will eliminate having to riff in the long run when we look out to March or April. Some people have been able, more so on the classified side, been able to find positions in other businesses, really, not other school districts, but other businesses. So some of that is taking place, which we figured would happen as we move forward. I would also like to follow up on a conversation, industrial arts teachers. We had some conversation with High Point. Deb Wortman and I are working on a proposal currently to look at a pre-engineering type program to bring into the high school that would work out of our industrial arts area. That would not be additional charge to our district, but their staff covering that. There was a survey done a few years ago, from my understanding from Deb, that showed an interest in Marysville schools, students in that area as a satellite program. So this would be an opportunity to possibly get that up and running as quickly as next school year.
That would be great.
That would
so
be.
Mm-hmm. We're still pushing forward with that and working on negotiating that. So that's not finalized, but that's in the works as well.
Maybe February, or is that's really not the budget coming out, that doesn't play too much of a
role? No, our early conversation, when I talked to Jeff, his concern, well, everybody's concern right now in education is the budget bill coming out in February and being able to shift staff. But this would be with current staff from High Point, but they would be located in Marysville.
Mm-hmm. Which they already do. We have what, like the teacher
for the teacher prep program.
Teacher prep program, right? Info, okay.
Yep. So we already have a couple models of that. There's construction. Mm-hmm. We've had a hard time getting off the ground. Mm-hmm. But that would be another example of
That's really kind of the future of...
Well, that's what I say. I guess depending on the funding model, I think it sounds like there's a lot more opportunities to do some of those, some of the things that they do very, very well, mm-hmm. Up there, their construction or even their engineering and those kind of things. So mm-hmm. Everybody's kind of on pins and needles, I think, for see what the state's going to come out with.
So we are working on the instructional coach side, we are working on job descriptions for those. To get those positions posted so we can start to see interest within our own district for those positions and making shifts if needed. That's in the works currently. Also, the job description for the centralized secretary position. So we're trying to get those out and posted for people to apply that are interested. I think those are the major areas to catch up on. Other questions for me?
Just if you could touch real quick, and I know you're not getting too in-depth, but just the things going on, the safety things going on with the...
Right. That's on my list. I meant questions on
this. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's all right. So safety visits, we just finished Monday with the high school. That would be the last one. I should get a report back tomorrow or Monday. We also were, some of the things obviously we're not going to release publicly because they are safety concerns. And while we're trying to be very transparent, we also don't want to issue things that would leave us in a bad situation. But I can tell you some of it is equipment. There are concerns with the cameras. There are concerns with the possibility of installing buzzer systems and different kind of, I'm going to mess it up again, Amy, wire mesh glass maybe mm-hmm. on the front of the building. So what we're going to do is take that information, try to generate a list. We've already had some interest from our PTOs to make mm-hmm. donations. What I've encouraged them to do is wait. So we're all buying the same system. One of the problems has been that we bought a system in one place, another place, and they're not the same. And when they break down, we're having trouble managing that. So, but those are going along. There will be two more rounds of evaluations from the police department as well. So we'll be sharing those out to the public as well.
Now, I know you guys have sat down with the departments and kind of gone over your priority list for our PI dollars. I assume that's going to have to be revised a little bit based on some of this input.
Yes, and we're anticipating some opportunities for grants to come out mm-hmm. And would like to be on the front side of having a plan to apply for some of those as well.
Great.
Any questions on that? And I think that's it for me. I would also, I guess the other thing is, as we move forward, I know you have a levy discussion this evening, a decision made about our renewals. Once that decision is made tonight, we will be putting together, if the levy does not pass, what that reduction list will be, and we'll be prepared to share that at the next board meeting on February 21st.
Right. It's also a good time to ask for volunteers for the levy committee.
It would. So if people are interested, we'll put a sign-up sheet. I also, this month is also Board Appreciation Month, if you didn't know that. So I do have a certificate, I guess, that is sent to us to recognize each one of you from Ohio School Boards Association. So I would like to take this opportunity to thank you for the service you do for our community. Certainly, you don't get a very large paycheck at all to attend all the meetings we've been having lately. And as someone new, I appreciate all the support that you've provided to me as well. I know it's been a difficult time, and I appreciate everything you've done. So, I'll start. Jeff?
Oh.
Mr. Mabee?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have to shake your hand. Yeah, that's all I need to do is trip and move it on.
Charlie Wilson's been the president this year, I see.
That's right. And frame that.
I just know.
That's right.
All right, thank you. Is there any further questions for Ms. Mankins? Okay, thank you. Next up is our treasurer's report. Cindy?
Okay, I'm going to go turn the lights off one more time. I think. Okay.
Huh?
You're going to get the lights.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
Since we're halfway through the year, I thought it'd be a good time to give you a little idea where we're heading and we're on target with the budget and where we go from here. Mid-year, halfway through it. Unbelievable already. Revenue, we've been in pretty good shape. We're hitting everything real close. You see that the advance 100% comes in one time, so you know how much it is. It's a one-time item. The real estate, we're down just a hair, but that's usual because we receive more money in the February collection than we do in the August collection or July collection. It's just a lot of people like to pay their taxes for the whole year, so it's just that way. The tangibles, usually the tangibles right at 50-50. If the utility companies didn't pay something, there might have been something there that got missed. We're sitting right at 49.89%, 50% for state basic aid. It looks like it might go down just a hair, but we're still looking at numbers and they're still taking that into consideration. Our restricted aid is right there at halfway, just like we thought it would be. And our homestead rollback and the TPP on harmless is just a little bit above. And then our miscellaneous, that's got all of the school fees and different things like that, CAPS, the Medicare reimbursements. The miscellaneous on that, school fees haven't been collected at the high school. They just started in January because we've been waiting on that, the program, the Easy Pay online credit card program, to get up and running with PowerSchool. Couldn't get it done the first part of the year. So the last couple weeks I've been seeing every day $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 payments coming in from the high school. So that's where we're at there. So overall we're at 48.61%. On our budget and the revenue coming in. And I just gave you a little thing you can read through that. It says exactly what I just told you. Expenditures, our salaries are right there. Our benefits are a little bit above. Benefits are above for a couple reasons. We had the large payment in September for the incentive buyout to the company. And also, when you put it into the system, it usually looks at the whole thing for STRS or SERS. Our STRS is based on last year's information. So we start a new year for STRS in January. It drops almost $20,000 per month now that we're going to be paying to STRS because we've got less people and the wages are lower. So that's why that's showing a little bit above this 50% mark. Purchase services below, supplies are below. The equipment reimbursement, the equipment purchases are high because we purchased most of that right at the beginning of the year. You want to have it for the school year to start out. And then our other is, those are miscellaneous dues type things. We've got some dues that are usually paid in January, school boards, things like that. So that'll be coming right back up. So we're at 49% of our appropriations, right where we need to be. This gives you the explanation. Okay. I'm going to talk a little bit about the changes in the forecast. This year, our changes in revenue is increase in values for the taxes. And what really was amazing to me when I was looking at our increases was public utility personal went up by 13.44%. It's a big jump. Usually it's 1 or 2%. So as you can see, I've made those changes here, just gave you the major changes. If you take that increase out, it really makes a big difference here for the next few years also. So Our revenue is up to $45,919,000 compared to the $45,801,000. That's just changes in revenue from the values on our taxes. Our expenditures, there are changes that I've put in. Nothing changed for this fiscal year on the forecast, but I did put in changes for next year, the decrease in the staff, the raise, the 2% that we took out of there for the difference there for next year, the decrease in the benefits that goes right along with the loss of staff, an increase in there for unemployment in our purchaser or our benefit area, some decreases in purchase services that we talked about, different things that we put in there. And also on line 12.010, I did not add the encumbrances in there. You can or you can't. Once you, when you do it, when you send it into the state, you have to. But just for this purpose, I did not. So it looks just a little bit different than the forecast. So overall, by making those changes for next year, we should be okay in 2014-2015. This takes into account that we took out 1% of TPP. We don't know what the state's going to do with that, if we're going to keep it at where at this current level, or if we're going to take it down to, you know, 2%, lose 2% each year, or not anything. Who knows what's going to happen? Don't know what else is going to happen with the rest of the state budget. It could go anyway. But right now, this is with the renewals. If we do not pass the renewals next year, it's $963,000 more that we have to cut for next year, and then it just keeps right on going. So we've got three chances to pass the renewals, May, August, and November. But if we don't have it, have a balance carried in as a positive, I'm not sure what the state will do. I have not gotten a letter yet to accept that says they've accepted our plan. I did get a confirmation that they received it, but it hasn't been confirmed that they've accepted it. So that is the end of that report.
Cindy, when you talk about having three chances to pass it, though, but if it didn't pass in May, it would force us to make the.
You have to have a balanced budget at the end of the fiscal year.
Right.
So probably by state law, we would have to make more cuts to make
before the end of the. I mean, for next four
August,
four
years, before next year started.
Right.
Yes. Right.
Yes.
So we would have to make almost $1 million in cuts between May and June 30th.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So how much do we lose if both levies, or if the two that are due this year don't pass? How much do we lose?
I included a sheet. There should be a separate sheet here for you.
It's all right. I understand.
The 4 and the 5 mil levies, the 5 mil, and if you add the taxes and our TPP replacement, is $6.8 million.
For the combined, nine mils, right?
9 mils. And then if you look at all three, it's 10.3.
And how much hits the first year?
The 6.8.
The hits, okay.
Yeah.
It'll hit right away. Okay.
Right. If we do not pass it during this calendar year, we will lose $6.8 million from the budget.
All right.
It was just a little different from where we thought it was, because when we looked last month at the total combined for the replacement levies, it had the other one in there.
Right. I guess I was trying to, I was picturing the forecast net line item, and I think it was less than the first
year. You should have a forecast added to that too.
Would that just be a part of it?
So yeah.
It'd only be half of it for that first year.
You'd only get half of it. Yeah. It's showing like 3.3 on the
first year.
Right.
Right. Right. It's only half of it for the first year.
Okay. That makes sense.
So all things considered, we're you know, if you look at our mid-year, we're kind of right on target with
we're
our
right
expenses and revenues.
Exactly.
And
we're right on target with what we thought we were going to be with revenues and expenditures. And I think those are, you know, that's good that we're right on our target. Mm-hmm. So we haven't, we've been trying to keep the hold of everything that we possibly can. So.
All right. Any questions on that stuff? Okay. What else you got?
That's it.
Okay. All right. Good info to know. Thank you for that update. Find my agenda. Next up is the Ohio High Point report.
The highlight was that I actually didn't go to the all boards banquet by myself this time. It was nice to have company. And then just to kind of talk a little bit about that, I thought, I don't know about you guys, but I thought it was very encouraging that the speaker that they had there talking mm-hmm. about this business development in or economic development in general mm-hmm. for the state of Ohio and in our area and the relationships with education and business. I thought that was pretty mm-hmm. I don't know, interesting and encouraging. Just some things at the last High Point meeting, they talked about they're implementing a new business program at one of the schools, or at least talking about it. It's going to be focusing on, it's going to have like an aviation flavor to it. So I think it's, I can't remember exactly which school it is, but these satellite programs are coming, some really neat opportunities for kids.
Wow.
So, March 5th, they're having a job fair. They're going to bring in employers and talk a lot about soft skills to kids, which I thought was neat. The adult ed is continuing to make the transition to Clark State, and then they're going to, you know, continuing to try to find consultative work. And part of that transition is they're actually going to reduce the number of full-time equivalents and move to more like an adjunct type staff, which I think is going to save them about $1.8 million in staffing costs, I think.
Wow.
So, that's interesting. That they're working on very soon out of High Point. I think this is to do more with their adult ed, is that they'll be able to actually right there on campus take people from the LPN to an RN right there on campus. So they're working towards that, which would be neat for this area. And then I talked about budgets last at the last board meeting and how they're going to put together two budgets. One is based on flat funding from the state, and the other one's a 10% reduction, so that they're kind of pushing that out to all the administrators, and they're all working on those two different budgets for their areas. And then this was kind of interesting, and I don't know if we've ever done this, but it's a Robert's Rules thing, so that's nothing. We had something on our agenda that was, we decided we wanted to pull off, we already started it, so what we ended up doing is just letting it die for lack of a motion.
There you go.
As opposed to trying to figure out how to pull it off. That was it.
Huh. Well, I'd like to say, you know, we went to the the banquet, and I thought just to kind of get up there and look around and see what they have to offer up there, it's actually pretty impressive. You know, it'd be nice to get more of our students kind of involved in that. And I know it's that satellite.
Yeah.
If we can get that going, I think we would have a lot bigger participation.
And that's really a win-win, I think, moving forward, the satellites, because we talked a little bit about this at our last the High Point meeting. Is, you know, as those, they want to expand their programming. You know, the current model where they do it all on campus, they would also have to expand their ability to do the academic side of things, the intervention. You know, whereas if they're doing more satellite stuff, they can focus in on that what they do really well, and then the academics and intervention will all be done, you know, right here at our school. So. And it'll be interesting to see where all it goes once the funding comes out. Phenomenal.
Yeah. All right, good. Anybody else have any questions? All right, thank you for that. Next up, our legislative report.
Not much to report, nothing happening yet. There is a new president of the Senate, Keith Faber, state senator from Salina, and he's doing something I think that's kind of interesting. He's making subcommittees on the Finance Committee, so that nearly every senator will serve on a subcommittee. And the three areas are Medicaid, healthcare, and human services. That's one. K through 12, education, finance. And the third one is general government issues. So I thought that was kind of an interesting approach to get all of the...
Which one does Senator Burke serve on?
You know, I didn't look, but my guess would be that it would be the Medicaid one.
Yeah, right? Just a guess. But
that would be where his forte is, so I seem to match people up to what their knowledge base is.
Sure.
And Bill Batchelder is the speaker once again in the House, and he is going to go digital with legislative documents and broadcasting the budget hearings in the House. Cool. So they're trying to be more transparent, get more people involved to be able to see what's happening. So I thought that was kind of interesting, too. And then all of the committees have been set, who's going to serve on what committee. So. And then, of course, the budget's coming out on February 4th. So that's the big news.
That's. I'm sure your next update will be very exciting.
I'm sure
it will covered before it gets
there.
Yeah, yeah, by that time everybody will know.
All right, thank you for that update. Next up is our Finance Committee, which I know will be a very busy update this
right.
month.
Yeah, we have been very busy. We've been spending a lot of time talking about cash balance policies, and so we have actually come up with one to share with the board. And I believe you'd made some recommendation that possibly we just kind of read through this.
Yeah, just walk through it real quick, and then kind of let's get input from the board, and then kind of send those back down to the Finance Committee, and then
right.
we can
come back
kind of,
and actually
kind of finalize and act on it, you know, next month. So anyways,
we spent several meetings talking about cash balance policies, and then at the last meeting, Doug had taken advantage of our new board docs and done some research on looking at other. District's cash balance policy, so brought in one that was a very simple, straightforward plan, and so we kind of combined a lot of things that we've been working on, but basically talking about how operating the district with financially sound management practices is integral to the ongoing well-being of the district, and that as part of the budgetary process, we need to maintain some sufficient financial reserves to minimize deficit spending and to protect against mid-year reductions in staffing or service levels due to unexpected revenue shortfalls. So in establishing this level of unreserved fund balance, we do it so that we can plan for contingencies, we can maintain good standing with rating agencies for debt, we can avoid interest expense for operating budget needs and capital needs, we can ensure cash availability for unexpected revenue shortfalls, and while doing this, we would be considering the Government Finance Officer Association's recommendations for cash reserves. And those recommendations are to have 5 to 15% of the previous year's actual revenue received and 1 to 2 months of expected expenditures. So in other words, we would want to be maintaining either 5 to 15% of our revenue or 1 to 2 months of expected expenditures. And let's see, and then something else that we had added in there was that district finances should be managed to ensure that projected year-end general fund expenditures do not exceed projected general fund revenues by more than 1% during any year within the rolling five-year forecast. So a real important part of our discussion was that this is not a one-year look. We're looking at it over 5 years so that, you know, we're not surprised out there in year 3 or 4 and all of a sudden saying, oh, we've got to do something. So it just keeps us on top of that forecast and reacting as things change.
Do we know historically 5, 6, 7 years how close we are to that 1% mark?
I have not looked at
that. I looked at it a little bit tonight, and I think it kind of goes back to the whole funding formula that,
right.
you know, as when you pass a levy, you get excess funds, and as that levy term expires, your expenses have gone up and your revenues have stayed flat. So at the end of that 5 years, you wouldn't be hitting that 1% differential. So that would clue you in, hey, you've got to do something here.
Right.
You know, it's either you've got to ask for new money or you need to be trying to find ways to cut costs, but it would alert you to the fact that something's happening that you don't want to have happen. So, but like the last few years, I think it was under the, it was well, well, we actually had surpluses.
Right. Well, my only concern would be is if you pass a levy, you know, and you're not spending anything, then you pass a levy and you've got additional things that you want to expand a program or stuff like that. Well, you're definitely going to exceed that 1% right out of the chute.
Possibly, you know, yeah. But again, I mean, I think, and that's something that I think we should look at historically and even into our, you know, the future forecast to get an idea, is that 1% a reasonable amount or not? Maybe even looking at some other school district's forecast, but I think that would be some good homework.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see something like
committee.
That would be.
Yeah. Just to kind of talk about, like, the high point they have, you know, their policy or position is that they're not going to ever have deficit spending. So, you know, and what that means is that if you see areas where you are, and they don't run into this because they don't really go on the ballot out there, but see areas in the future where you are going to go down, then you put a plan in place to address that, whether it be a levy or whatever. Now, where the exceptions come is if there's a big expenditure that comes up that you just can't plan for.
Right.
And, you know, the mindset out there is, well, those things, to have a 1 year expenditure that kind of puts you in that deficit spending, you can tolerate that if you have the cash to deal with it. It's those ongoing deficits that really cause problems, and those are exactly the types of deficits that lead to these cuts. You know, so you end up carrying sufficient cash balances. It's gonna, if you don't have something in there that kind of cap your deficits, you can really run the district into deep deficits. You go for a levy, if it fails, now you're looking at bigger cuts,
right?
And so I think that's where we really need to find, I think put a cap on how big those deficits need to be, and put a plan in place to address.
Absolutely.
It.
Well, I think once you hit it, I mean, you should have a plan to try to address it instead of, you know.
Right.
Well, and that's looking out 5 years too, right? So when you're looking out and you say, okay, well, we're projecting deficits in year four.
Let's start planning.
Yeah,
for
let's
now.
Start planning how we're going to address that.
Absolutely.
Right.
So.
Right.
And the reason the 1% was put on there, because Sue, that, you know, I know there was some talk about just, I think the original language talked about eliminating the deficit.
And I said that seemed a little harsh. Yeah. You know, I like the idea of reducing or, you know, whatever. So.
So, and the, you know, I think we should look at that number and see if 1% is reasonable or not, but. Right. I kind of just picked that number because
it's just concern was, you know, is, you know, because we're like this, so, you know, when you're on the upswing, you know, your expenditures are most likely going to exceed your last year's, because you're.
And I think, I mean, the whole idea of this policy is not to say you can't have something like that. It's that when you do have something like that, this gives you a chance to react
absolutely.
To it.
This is the kind of thing we need to use to plan. I think there's no question.
And I like the idea of running some of those scenarios or looking historically at how that fluctuates, so we make sure we set that number at a reasonable number.
Yeah, that's all. I just want to make sure we're reasonable on that number. So.
Yes, I agree.
Okay. So I guess if there's any other questions or concerns over the next month or before we have our next Finance Committee meeting, which is February 5th, please, you know, let Doug or myself know, and we can
take it to the
meeting.
My only other comment would be that you know, we're gonna implement it whenever, next month or whatever, but there's got to be some kind of ramp up or some kind of talk about, you know, ramping that forward. I don't think we're there. We're not 2 months or even 1 month now.
It says 1 to 2 months, right? And
I'm just saying, yes, it should be have something that said, you know, we're gonna,
we'll have to do a plan right away. But I don't think it's gonna be as scary as you think.
I don't want someone to say, oh, well, you got this cash policy and you're nowhere near following it, but we just implemented it last month.
One thing the Finance Committee did mention that didn't make it to the policy, and I think that was there was a suggestion that we talk about what specifically that cash balance should be used for, the types of things. And I think, at least personally, I thought it was just more of a, you know, the whole idea of good policy language, not being too restrictive, yourself in, I think, is why it never really made it into the policy.
I agree.
Think like that one example that you brought in that was just real simple, you know, and gave those bullet points of these are the reasons why you have it. I think that kind of covers what you would be using it for anyway, so.
Well, good. Well, I appreciate the work that you guys did on that. I think that's going to be very helpful.
Good. Okay. And then the second part of our meeting, we spent a lot of time talking about levy options and again, try to take a long-term approach, looking at, you know, the next several years and what do we have out there as far as renewals and what does our forecast look like, and just trying to really look at the reality of what our finances are. And so some of the comments from the committee was that, you know, we need to make, well, we talked about the three renewals. We have two renewals that are due this year. We have another renewal that's due next year. The two this year are a 5 and a 4. Next year it's 6.56. We talked about the fact that we need to make sure that the voters know that it's not, that there are no new taxes. These are all renewals, levies that have been passed in the, that passed in the past, I guess. So it wouldn't cost you anything additional. The committee also felt that the renewals need to be continuous, that if we keep on putting on these levies as a 5-year renewal, then, you know, a lot of the comments from people are, we're constantly coming to them for money. If these are levies that have been passed and have been out there for multiple years, it's pretty evident that we need them to operate the school system. And so they felt that they should be continuous. And then we had a long discussion about how and when to put the levies on the ballot. So throughout those conversations, I think the committee all felt that it would be a good idea to combine some of those renewals. We talked about combining the 5 and the 4. And then at one point, we also talked about bringing in the renewal from next year and combining them all together. So again, it had a lot of conversation about what that would look like. That would be 15.56. Okay. We were also concerned about when we would be able to ask for new money. And so I think based on a lot of these comments, took a vote, and the majority of the committee felt like it would be best to combine all three for this May. And then also talk about when we would be coming for new money to try and give the community a feel for what's out there in the future.
So is that on a continuing basis?
That was on a continuing basis.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. They also felt that, you know, if the levy committee needs to make very clear what's going to happen if the levies don't pass, what it's going to mean to the students, what it's going to mean to families and the community. And they're also concerned about the state funding and the new state budget and how that's going to be communicated to the taxpayer with the levy on in May. So again, the final decision of the Finance Committee was to consider putting all three of the levies on as renewals in May for a continuous period of time. Okay, just a couple other things that we talked about were the, I brought up the idea of starting an education foundation for the district, and I have talked to both the Marysville Alumni Association as well as the Alumni Scholarship Group, thinking that it would probably make sense to try and work all together, not step on anybody's toes. And so we are, you know, we have started some conversations in that area, and there is some interest from both groups. So hopefully we'll move that forward. And then just talked about bringing in some new members on the committee. Several members have dropped off, so we're looking for new members. So anyways, that was the work of the Finance Committee. There were some concerns with putting them all three together because with that number being large, mm-hmm. and that, you know, if they didn't pass, that there were going to be some cuts. So I know that again, so, you know, it was not a unanimous vote. I'll put it that way.
And I think even everybody recognized it was a risky.
Yes.
And
right.
An all-in type of situation.
But it sounded like it was at least unanimous in putting them on as a continuing.
Yes.
And at least combining the, at least the
right.
two, right?
Right.
Yes.
It's some kind of combination and then a right. continuing. I mean, those are
right.
at least the two pillars.
And I think, yeah, because I think they thought, you know, wanted to try and eliminate confusion, that if you have them on separately, maybe they'd vote for one and not the other.
Right.
About combining them into one and just being very clear it's not new taxes. That would be the way to go, just because, you know, they understand looking at that forecast what it means if these renewals don't pass.
Gotcha.
So, and I think that was also the concern about putting the new money on now too, that confusion of, you know, this,
sure.
well, we need to just focus on getting these renewals passed is what the committee felt.
Okay.
I think I also heard you know, we talked last time, combine the 5 and 4,
mm-hmm.
and then that passes, we go back in November and ask for the 6, 5, 6.
Mm-hmm.
I think the committee also said that's 3 times you're going to be on in one calendar year.
Mm-hmm.
They were concerned about that. You'd be on in November, you'd be on in May, and mm-hmm. again in November.
Mm-hmm.
That came forward as an area that of concern. So that is really, I think, what pushed some to go ahead and put it on with this one, get them out of the way.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think that most importantly was just to be talking now. We have to let people know that these renewals are out there.
And they all volunteered to be a part of the levy.
I think that's great.
I'm excited about that.
All right. Well, great. I thank all of those on the finance committee.
Yes.
I got to be honest with you, that's a lot of great input that we're getting, and you know, I think we certainly value their input.
Definitely.
So, and I know they put a lot of work into it. So thank you to those folks.
It's one of our longer meetings.
It was. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. If there's nothing else for the finance committee, then I'm going to move on. Public participation. Everybody's favorite part of the meeting. Pam Klaus would like to speak to us tonight. You know, pretty soon, Pam, you know, you're here enough. We're just going to get you a seat at the end of the table.
Hello. Good to see you all again.
Thank you.
I'm here to ask for your assistance. I'm sure you've all heard of the MDC for Make a Difference grant. Has everybody seen the ads for that?
Yes, I have.
Well, I'm happy to say that the Marysville Choral program has been nominated for that grant, and we need your help, and we need everybody's help here. If you all, beginning November 4th, can go online.
I'm sorry, when?
No, excuse me, February
4th. Okay.
February 4th. Could go online for us and vote every day for the Marysville Choral Program. It's really, really simple. All you need to do is go to NBC4MakeADifference.com, and if it's step by step, click the vote button. Search for Marysville High School and vote for us on a daily basis. And voting ends, by the way, on March 7th. We would be very grateful. If you're a Facebooker, you can always do it on Facebook. Just search for the MDC Facebook page and click on the logo, the Make a Difference logo, and you can vote for us there, too. So we're really, it's a $10,000 grant.
Wow.
It's not
That's
a
great.
Little grant. It's a big
yeah.
grant.
How many, out of how many people qualified or did
not?
And they're just giving out. They're giving out one.
They're giving out three.
Three. Rooms, okay.
One in each size category of school.
Okay.
We're considered a large school.
Okay.
And we are in the shine category, obviously the vocal
okay.
program. If you're, we also like to ask you to help us spread the word.
Okay. Absolutely.
If you tweet, please tweet it. If you're a Facebooker, put it on your Facebook page. Email it to all your friends. If you can talk it up to your neighbors and your coworkers,
right.
we would really be grateful.
We'll do an email box
yeah, about
for you and put it on the website. And then Chamber, I'll send it to them. Chamber always sends out, like we did the high school participation, what was that, Spielman?
Yeah, the Spielman
challenge,
thing.
But we can do that.
That would be great.
Yeah.
I will get you all that information. And all the information will be on the Choral Boosters website, too, MarysvilleChoir.com.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to put it there until February 4th. It will all be there. I think that's all I have to tell you. That the top 6 vote-getters of all the schools that have nominations will go to the next stage of the competition, which is when 3 schools, again, one from each category size-wise, will be chosen to be the winner of a $10,000 grant. So keep your fingers crossed, and if you could, again, just help us get the word out and vote every day. That's like 30-some votes.
And aren't you going to make a plug for this weekend?
Oh, that's coming next.
That's
okay.
next on the
okay.
list.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you, Pam. And then, yes, we will do whatever we can to get the word out.
Thank you. Very
Absolutely.
Very much.
Okay. Next up,
Melissa
Cunningham.
I'm the plug for this weekend. I'm just going to read the letter that I actually was dropping off the board office today, but I came here. So this wasn't planned, but anyway. I'm the chairman of the showcase. I've been the chairman for the last 6 years for the Shofar showcase that we're having this weekend, and this is just a letter I wrote. Which I need my glasses. Please accept my invitation to attend the showcase, Marysville Show Choir Showcase Invitational on Saturday, January 26th. This is our biggest fundraiser of the year, and it will prove to be both an exciting and exhausting experience for the Swingers Unlimited members and their families, as choirs will start to arrive at 6 a.m. and will not leave until well after midnight. This year we have 19 groups traveling from all over Ohio, West Virginia, and we have a group coming from Virginia to compete. Total number of students, including our swingers, participating in the event will be approximately 1,200. When the spectators are added in, we should have 2,000 to 2,200 folks spending the day at NHS. If you've never been to a show choir event, which there have been many, I highly encourage you to come and experience the day or parts of it. It's highly entertaining and also gratifying to see such talent and time invested in the arts. It's also amazing how competitive the groups can be and how physically strenuous the shows are. It's the epitome of teamwork to pull it all off. I've attached a copy of the daytime schedule for each of you to see. And the evening performances will begin between 7:30 and 8. It'll open with our Marysville Mini Swingers. The top six choirs of the day will follow, and the evening will close out with our Swingers Unlimited performing while the final scores are being tallied. That's usually around midnight. So they've been there from 6 a.m. until midnight. By midnight, they're dressed, and they try to do their show like it's rock stars. I sincerely hope you'll take a portion of your day to see some of the shows or come to the True Showcase in the evening. This is my 12th and final year of the program, and I wouldn't trade these years for anything. All three of my children have profited immensely from their experiences as members of Swingers Unlimited. It's unbelievable the number of friends they have made, the lifetime skills they've acquired, and the sheer excitement they've realized through all the experiences associated with show choir. As a parent, I'll surely miss the experiences and friendships that I have also made. I'll miss all the time I've spent through the years getting to know all the kids, sharing their dreams, and watching them realize them after leaving MHS. We have some really talented alumni, for sure. Our school is a lot to be proud of. I'm including complimentary wristbands for the day for your use. I hope to see each of you there. Swingers rock. Sincerely, Melissa Cunningham, and if you need more, let me know. And it's going to be a great day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And it's not going to snow. Tomorrow.
Thank you. Where's my list?
What are you looking for?
There's no one else. I'll open it up real quick for people who forgot to sign the list. Does anybody else want to address the board? All right. Next up, I need a motion to approve the December 20th, 2012 regular minutes and the January 7th, 2013 organizational minutes as submitted.
Second.
Moved and second. I believe, Cindy, you had some.
We had a few changes that I will make on those. The organizational meeting had a couple, and then there was a comment on the one on December, the December 20th. I'll make those corrections on.
Okay. Is there any other additions, changes, deletions on those minutes? Hearing none, then can I get a roll call, please?
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up, I need a motion to approve the Treasurer CFO action items as submitted, please.
So moved.
Second. Moving second, Ms. Ritter.
The basic action items are just normal check registers and all. We're down to 15 days of cash for December, which makes it hard. So I've asked for an advance of taxes from our county auditor.
Well, it's a good thing she's here then. Did you bring that with you?
Yeah, okay. We'll get it. So we'll take care of that tomorrow, and it'll help us out since we have payroll and other things to pay this month. So it's not good when you're down that low.
Yeah.
It makes it January and February are really tough months to go through.
Okay. Any questions? Hearing none, then, can I get a roll call, please?
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Mead.
Yes. Motion carries. Next up, I need a motion to approve the student on tuition basis.
Second.
Moving second. Any discussion on that?
Yeah, it's just nice to read the letter.
That was a nice letter.
Yes, it was.
It's a student who had come here, I think, last year.
Yeah,
it sounded like a great experience.
So. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I need a roll call, please.
Mrs. Powers?
Yes.
Mrs. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Rady?
Yes.
Mrs. Devine?
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Okay. Next up, hold on 1 sec, let me catch up here. I need a motion to approve the master lease purchase agreement, please.
So moved.
Second.
Moving second. Cindy, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes.
Since I know this has been a challenge.
She yeah. may celebrate.
We finally received the master the lease agreement on the wireless infrastructure and routers and servers and everything so that we can start that. We need this infrastructure because, A, it's going to help with the tablets and those kind of things throughout the buildings, and also because it's going to be our infrastructure for a new phone system. The phone system we have, you know, is on its last leg. With the technology director leading us, he's the one that knows how to put it back together. It's probably going to cost about $1,500 a month for a maintenance agreement, just so that we've got somebody ready to roll if something does happen on that. And it's been breaking down a lot. So this is the new lease agreement put together by Squire Sanders, and we're going with PNC. It looks a little different, and I just want on the section one, it has a 1.75% interest rate in there. However, the company that we are purchasing the equipment is paying that interest. Oh. So that's where we're getting our 0%. They are going to pay that difference on that on the interest, so it will be 0% as they said they could do with the, what we thought we could do with the original company. And so
is that HP equipment?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so okay. Yeah.
So that's. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention because that 1.75 is not what we discussed mm-hmm. originally.
No, that's a good deal.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, any other questions or discussion? Hearing none, then I need a roll call, please.
Mrs. Devine?
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter?
Yes.
Mrs. Powers?
Yes.
Mr. Rady?
Yes.
Mrs. Spear?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. All right, next up, I need a motion. Well, it's not yet. To approve the resolution declaring it necessary to renew two existing tax levies into a single tax levy. This is for... as it's sitting in front of us, is it for to combine the 5 and the 4 into a 9? I guess just to kind of lead that discussion a little bit, was there any thought about doing the 15 mil? Or was everybody pretty? I mean, I know we had a discussion about it at our organizational meeting,
right.
And you know,
right.
in deference to the finance committee,
right. We did talk about that.
You know, just my own opinion. I think you know we've communicated that 9 mils for. 6-8 months, mm-hmm. you know, it's been on the calendar, and obviously, if it doesn't pass, we're going to have to make reductions. I'm not much of a gambler or an all-in kind of person, mm-hmm. so I mean that's been part of our plan. So personally, I think a 9 mil is from my point of view is the direction. But you know, I just kind of head down. You know, Amy, what do you think?
I mean, I'd love to put them all on and get it over in one.
Sure.
Place, but I, you know. A little bit gun shy with what we just went through.
Sure.
I'd like to believe that the community is ready at this point to put them all three on, but it just makes me a little leery of what cuts we would have to do if we do it in one shot. Right.
I apologize. I need a motion in a second.
I was just
saying. Sorry, I apologize.
That's fine.
So if I can get a motion.
So moved.
Second.
And say, okay, thank you. Now continue. My apologies.
I honestly think that, you know, generally renewals have been kind of a slam dunk in this community, and I understand we can't take that for granted anywhere, and I think anything that you do that's different than just asking for a renewal, you're going to lose votes. I mean, and you'll lose support even the people who don't vote. There's going to be people that are not going to be happy with those changes, so even making it continuous will probably lose votes for that. Making it combining it into a big, a two-digit number, I think would just be, and then that also would take all our renewals off the table. So there are, you know, certain people that look at those renewals as an opportunity to hold the district accountable. And I think, you know, doing the 9 continuous they still have that opportunity with the 656 as long as that's a renewal.
Sure.
So combining them all, I think just there's just too many things that could cause it to lose. And even if it didn't lose, even if it passed, you would have a lot of people, I think, that would be not very happy with it.
Sure. So, Ms. Greer?
I'm of the same opinion. I don't think it would be prudent or wise to combine the three and put it on the ballot. Also because of, you know, the change to making it continuous. I think it just gives it too much of a potential to be a loss when we need for the district finances at this point to be as stable as possible. And I think that is just way too risky to combine the three to put it on the ballot.
Okay. Ms. Devine?
Yeah, and I mean, I have to confess that I'm in the finance committee. I'm the one who brought the idea of pulling up that 6.56 together, you know, with the other ones. But then I think the realization when I sat there and I said, well, the 5 and the 4 have to be renewed this year. I mean, they're due this year, and the 6.56 isn't due until next year. And so so I think it does make more sense to stick with the 9%. It's a more reasonable number. You know, everyone in this room is so, you know, involved with the schools, but there's a lot of people out there in the community who maybe aren't quite so involved and look at numbers and, you know, maybe don't have as much information as we have. And I know we're going to do the best job we can to get all that information out there. But I think, again, sticking with the number that has been thrown out there for a while now, you know, we've been talking about the 5 and the 4. I think that makes sense to just really focus on that because, you know, besides having the renewal, we know we're going to, I mean, we can't deny the fact that we need some new money out there, too.
Sure.
So we've got a lot on the horizon, and I just think that just addressing it in the time that it's needed and working as hard as we can is the right thing to do.
Right. And I got to tell you, that 15 number would be a sticker shock to a lot of
right.
people, I think.
Right.
I mean, it would be hard. I don't care how big you put no new taxes. People see 15 on there, and it's just that's
especially after they've just finished doing all of their income tax returns.
Yeah.
Probably not a wise idea.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Mankins, what?
I think everyone's. I mean, the finance committee certainly raised some questions. I think again, as part of that overall plan, whatever decision we make tonight, as a part of our package, I think we need to be prepared to talk about when the community can expect a 6.56 and when they can expect to see us for new. I think that's only fair. So as looking at the 5-year forecast, I think the next conversation is, okay, if it passes, will you see us in November with the 6.56? That's the earliest we can ask for that.
Mm-hmm.
Or will you see us next, you know, whatever.
Sure.
And then when can you expect to see us again for new? I mean, we can't ignore what's out there on our horizon.
Cindy?
I understand the whole 15.56 and being skeptical and all that, and I understand that. But if we go just straight with the 9, my personal opinion is that we can't go in November. We need to give them a break because that's 3 times within a year
mm-hmm.
that we've been on the ballot for money. And that's what we get hit all the time about. You're always on the ballot. And that, whether it's for new or renewals or whatever, we've got to give them a break on when that is. So it's going to have to be sometime in the next year to go for that 6.56.
Now, really, we moved that 6.56 up a year. I mean, I know we don't have to put it on in November. I mean, it was just
exactly.
It was just we could, but
we don't have to. Exactly. We have school board member
elections
in November also, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure that's fair to people running for the board to have
a renewal. I honestly think that you could put it on November and not do a whole lot of campaigning. I think people. I mean, we'll see how this first one goes first, but I mean, they're renewals, and I think you'd be fine putting it on in November, and you'd probably get it passed. I mean, when we ran, Jeff, I think me, you, and Tracy ran, there was a renewal on.
There was.
Yeah, so, and there wasn't any campaigning done for that. It was just, I mean, I don't even know if you saw signs out for at the time, maybe.
No, I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm getting older, so I'll be honest.
I don't know.
It's been a long time.
I think this town does understand renewals. And at least enough to pass me, so.
The other thing is going to be, we'll have a better idea on the state funding too.
That's a big piece because that's good. That's a whole new model that we're going to, apparently, with some surprises from what I understand. Right. So
that's the quote.
Yeah, so
that'll make a big difference on the new money, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It'll just give us a better idea of, you know, that long term picture.
Yeah.
Right. And the sooner we do that, if it comes out in February, we also know that it could change by July 1st.
Right.
You know, but at least it's a little temperature check for us on how we want to move forward. I just think that's really important to communicate out. You know, this is kind of our financial levy plan.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I think we do have to let the people know that this is, if we only combine the two, I think people have to know that there is a renewal, another one that's going to come up, and I think we have to let them know that when we put the 9 on, if we don't include it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The 15, just so it doesn't look like, oh, they got the 9, now they're going to come and ask for more. Why didn't we know that?
Right, but again, I mean, even as we started talking last year, you know, even when that whole financial plan was put out, I mean, we knew there was two this year and there's the one for next year. Although I agree, it's still going to be a surprise to some people. I get it. But you have to continue to tell that story, and I think that's what we need to do. We just need to continue.
And I think if we're up front, I think that's the most important thing, is that we have to let people know on this one. If this doesn't pass, this is what's going to happen.
Right, and we're going to see that next. We're going to see that next month.
That's
critical.
Right.
I mean, it's got to pass in May, or we're going to be, under that reduction umbrella again.
So I think
prior to the beginning of the school.
Right. Prior. I mean, we have
I think we have to let people know how their children and their lives are going to be affected for sure.
Exactly. So
I would like to say that when the governor's budget does come out, that we take whatever is said or whatever we can kind of pull from that and just say, okay, build a plan around that, and with the recognition that maybe it will change. But I think in the past, we were reluctant to kind of commit to things that weren't chipped in stone, and I think we have to kind of say, given the best, the knowledge we have today, this is our plan, and if something changes at the state funding level, then we'll change it in our forecast.
Sure.
But I don't think we should wait till May to put out a forecast so that we have more accurate numbers. Yeah. I think
Once we get it, we'll start working, and then as it changes, we can change the forecast, which is no problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, then a roll call, please.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
And Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next is the second resolution that we need.
I know, but you're not going to get it until I get
it. All right. Talks among yourself. Mingle. It is supposed to snow tonight, right?
No, tomorrow.
It's tomorrow?
Like about 10 o'clock, 10 a.m. I think it's
6 a.m. That's what they told me.
I don't know if I heard that on the radio or if I saw it on an AccuWeather alert. I didn't just make it up.
I did my weather channel hour by hour.
I think I
have to be up at
4:30.
I think AccuWeather is more accurate than the weather channel.
I think that's pretty much what everybody uses, don't they, is AccuWeather? That's all the farmers I know use AccuWeather.
Because it's more accurate.
That's why they call it AccuWeather. Right?
My kids love 2 hour delays. They get up every morning.
So we have 2 hour delay.
Hey, that ice cube thing, it worked.
I told you. We had to be loud.
And there was some, she said, one of her friends said, if you can make it be a 2 hour delay, what do you have to do?
The windshield.
Oh, my God.
Whatever it is.
What do you want?
That's too funny.
You know, initially, I heard like 2 to 4, but then
I heard 1 to 3. I heard 1 to 3 on my way in here.
And not real windy or anything. I mean, it's, yeah.
Yeah, if you're up at my house, it'll be none to 5. Did you have to find a tire? Did they fix it?
You get a lot of drifting in your house.
Oh my gosh, it's ridiculous.
Is it?
It is ridiculous, especially down my driveway, because my driveway goes like this, it curves.
Yeah.
So depending on where you're at, some spots are nothing, and some spots are way over your bump.
Do you have a snowmobile?
No.
Do you have a plow?
I do. I did. But when I was on vacation and I was there and we had a young lady house sitting us. We had all that snow over Christmas. She got stuck in my driveway, and luckily my neighbor came out and dug her out and plowed my driveway for her. But after that, she just parked at the end and walked up to the house. I'm like, you're going to walk up to the house from the end of that driveway in the cold and blowing? She's like, I didn't want to get stuck out there again. Okay. Yes, ma'am, please.
And I have the resolution. Thank you. I found kind of a housekeeping issue that your treasurer had mentioned that I wanted to verify, and I will take care of the documentation I need to give her. So when she comes to pick up the check tomorrow, I will have a signed copy for her then.
Okay.
For what you just asked. Having said that, I'd just like to make an editorial comment, which I know is a little bit scary. But I think it's very wise of the board to not put three issues before the voters in the same 12 or 13 month time period for no other reason than the fact that you incur significant election expenses with every single time.
Even in November we would?
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay.
It's based on population of the district. And the districts, or any taxing districts, are in the district.
Right.
You know, you've got Allen, Liberty, all the townships, not just the city of Marysville, all of Leesburg, all the areas that have Marysville students incur a portion of that election expense. So I just think that's intelligent, and I applaud you for that, because those expenses eat away at your proceeds. Every time I settle those dollars, I take that election expense to reimburse the Board of Elections for their expenses for carrying out the election. Mm-hmm. So just, you know, people I don't think realize that. And I know the board feels like the money needs are significant, and clearly they are. It's hard. It's a hard decision to make, to how often you ask, knowing that there is a cost to the ask. So I just think that's intelligent.
Thank you for that. I'm glad we got that on.
Yeah.
Well, again, folks just don't think about that.
Sure.
And when I'm doing settlements, you know, I've got to remove those expenses. In fact, I've got a number of townships that are asking for certifications like you're going to be getting tomorrow, and they'll call me and ask for a revenue estimate. And, oh, by the way, is anybody else on the ballot this time? Because if there isn't, then they shoulder the entire election expense of the Board of Elections to conduct that election.
Right.
Instead of having it divided by all those in the district, Taylor Township, for example. So they like the fact that you might be on the ballot because you reduce a little bit of their expense.
That's what I was thinking. November, though. I mean, put it in November rather than May.
It's a little bit smaller.
Wait until May. Wouldn't you have a smaller expense in November?
May will definitely be more expensive.
What is the range that
of expense?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I just got an email from the director today asking when I need those chargebacks, by when, in order to subtract them from the settlement. I don't know what they'll be. It's always historical. You know, we're always chasing the horse after it's left the barn. So I don't have the expenses yet for the Board of Elections, so I don't know what they'll be for this last time, nor what they'll be for May. Anyway, it's an editorial. Okay. People just don't think about that. And
sure.
I clearly did not until I started working in the largest office. And then one other note to consider. When your treasurer had let me know that you were considering combining all three of those, or at least wanted to make it an issue for discussion, something that you may or may not have considered is that if you would have chosen to combine those three levies, you would have lost a year of the 656. It's an old levy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you would have been successful in renewing it a year early, you don't get to tack on a year at the end.
Okay.
You would have lost that collection year for that levy. So whether that has any merit, since you have voted to not combine all three of those. Just another little bit of a let.
If you make that continuing, does that matter?
It probably wouldn't.
No.
Okay.
In this case, if you wouldn't, because as I understand it, you were doing several things, combining, continuing, and renewing. So if you would have just combined and renewed, then what I just said would have definitely had an impact.
Huh.
Continuing, then obviously it's not going to come before the electorate again.
Right. So if we decide in November that we want to just as a matter of discussion, if we said, you know what, we just want to put that on for five more years, and it passes in November, we would actually lose that year at the back end.
Not in November.
Early November, stages, okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Even though it's a year early,
yes.
Because it's for the next year.
Opportunities to renew it, but this is the fourth. Right. This would be outside the normal renewal time period because you're combining it with two others.
The only reason we're able to do it would be because it was combining it.
Right. Right. So because levy language, they're for exact same purposes. There were a number of hoops that y'all have to jump through to be able to do what you want to do.
Right.
Anyway, so it was a little bit of a learning thing for me, too. I had to see my own legal counsel because I was unsure about combining levies that had different origination years. Mm-hmm. And so that was something, and even getting a certification estimate when you have definite effective rates. Your effective rate for your 4 and your 5 are nearly identical because they were passed in the same calendar year. They have the same reduction factor. So those were easy to calculate a renewal amount. The 656 was passed originally in, 98? So it would have a completely different reduction factor, which takes me into the other point I wanted to let you know, and you've got leaders here, you all, that are on the ball, that the 656 is currently being collected at 3.5.
Mm-hmm. A replacement.
So a replacement, there's opportunity for replacement dollars in there as well.
And I guess that just made me think when you were talking about, if we did it in November, would we lose a year? But I guess just to make it clear, the only way we could pull it, the only way we could do it earlier than November was to combine it with something else.
Right.
If somebody says, if you want to do the 9 and then the 6.56 separately, you can't do that now.
Right.
It would have, it had to be combined with something to
I don't think we've ever had to work with anything like that.
I mean, there's so many.
The 6.56 to replace it whenever you're ready for those numbers, let me know.
Okay.
What happened here based on 12 values. So, if in fact that's a course you decide to pursue.
Sure. Okay.
And the third thing was the treasurer said something about revenue, and I feel like we're in an up. We're not, the taxes that folks are paying next month and in July are not reflective of Union County update year. An update year, as you know, and just for clarification for the audience and for the press, is either a reval, which is a 6-year visual inspection update, or it's a triennial update, which is a statistical update. No visual inspection required, only necessary when the appraiser believes there's an anomaly of some sort. 12, which is the tax lien date on which taxes that are being paid in February and July are based, is not an update year for Union County. So any increases in revenue due to value change within for a tax base due only to new construction. Adding on building, if there would have been a reduction in value, then to destroy buildings. But she mentioned public utility. That is not something that is under the purview of the county auditor. Those values are actually provided to us by Staple Highway every year. So if they have valued utilities, of which we have a significant number, in the county higher for tax year 1/1/12, tax lien date 1/1/12, then those numbers are provided to us, and we have to include those in our annual abstract. An abstract, the definition of it, is the value by tax district of all the property, tangible, or real property, in the county, which includes public utility. So I live and breathe this, so when you mentioned increase in value of my weight, no. Okay, I wanted to clarify that it's not an increase in the value of my house or your house.
Right.
It's due to would be any new construction within the county or your tax that Marysville accepted.
Also, it includes all some of the Board of Revision changes that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
And so that.
If there are Board of Revisions.
There are Board of Revision, and that's.
1/1/12.
For 1/1/12.
So an increase or decrease in value would be new construction, destroy building, loss of value. The Board of Revision is when people complain against their value and whether they're successful, or I guess you define what is successful. Whether they lose or gain in value, and then public utility. A segue to that, and then I will stop, unless you have any questions for me, is that 13 is our update year.
Okay.
So we are knee-deep in the midst of our six-year reval now. So the process, as it is today, is that all the visual inspections have been concluded. That doesn't mean that if there are any questions by the appraisal team, they might not go back out or visit or call or whatever question they need to have answered. But they are busy, evaluating every single parcel in the county today is going on right now. And we have to, by statute, have to have, it's kind of like a temporary or an estimate of what we believe the value of the county is going to be submitted to the state by June 1st. And if they approve that number, then we will know probably by near the end of June, what that number is going to be, and I will let you know. The changes to that number will occur in the three and a half months following that approval, because immediately following the receipt of that approval by the state of Ohio Joe Testa's office, we then will be, this is my first reval as being the auditor, and with our new CAMA system, we have a brand new vendor, and very excited. The project plan is really, really tight, and we will be sending out what we call value change letters. They are estimates. They aren't, you know, they aren't in stone, but they are pretty decent estimates of what each individual property value we think it's going to be for 1/1/13, based on all of the 18, 20 months of inspection that's been going on. And what we'll be doing is setting up informal hearings in my office. I've got several rooms across the hall and connected, and appraisers will be on site. We're going to have, oh golly, I think 3 weeks of 3 to 4 days each week, call, come in, cattle call, 15, 20 minutes commercial, longer. If it's a residence, 15, 20 minutes is usually adequate. Bring evidence, tell us why you think our value for your property is incorrect, and we'll be making those changes right then. Maybe not that day, but by the end of the week, because we're going to be inundated. making those changes. And those would be the changes when I just said to Mrs. Ritter that we will have a temporary estimate that state approves in June, but those 3 months will be open for citizenry to contest their value or to bring in evidence of why they believe our value is incorrect. And I welcome that, truly. You know, mass appraisal is not an exact science. The very definition of it is not. It means it's not an exact science. We do our best to be as close to market as possible, but we're not perfect and we make mistakes, but there are standards, and we try to do our best to educate the public on what those standards are when they call to complain or question or be educated, as well as bring in their evidence. But there will be changes, guaranteed, countywide. And so the hope is that the estimate that I provide to your treasurer 1st of July is not too different from the final numbers that get approved by the state the first week in November. And then that is on which taxes will be based for your collection for February, July 14th. So any estimates that I provide here for this 4 and 5 will be big. I've got to certify the values that I have today by law. But keep in mind that those renewals will take effect for 1/1/13. And I don't know what those values are going to do. My crystal ball, it's pretty cloudy.
Yeah.
So we have some areas of the county that prices are still increasing. We have other areas where sales are going crazy, but the prices are still not very high. And, you know, it's a market-driven industry. So I really can't even begin to predict and would be foolish to do so. So anyway, I just want to let you know that even though with the certification that she'll get tomorrow was based on 1/1/12, that 1/1/13 is when this levy renewal, assuming that passes, would go into effect.
Gotcha.
Okay. Did I say anything that is requires clarification?
I don't think so.
And one other thing, I had made an offer to your treasurer superintendent after the December board meeting. If you, in the course of your levy activities, want to have any public sessions or educational or ask the auditor, my eyes that could be written in a paper about questions about what is a mill or what is the levy or what is this renewal or what's a replacement, how is that different and how does it affect us and when do they expire or whatever, let me know. I'm more than happy to have some informal sessions. We can do them in my office, we can do them here, we can do them whenever. Just let your constituents know. Call us. That's what we're there for. My email is auditor@co.union.oh.us, and that comes right to my inbox. I'm the only one that sees that email. And if people have questions already, because we've had dog tag licenses go out and tax bills, people have gotten them, and because of our new system, we're still cleaning up conversion. You know, you don't ever go through a conversion unless you're really, really desperate, and we were really, really desperate, but we're still cleaning up the remains of conversion issues, going from an old AS-400 to not an AS-400. And so we're trying to do our best to clean up some of those conversion hiccups that we are still experiencing. So we're getting a fair amount of calls now and doing our best to be as responsive as possible quickly. But call us if you have questions now or in the future, and we'll be glad to.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to offering your knowledge to do that. That would be great.
I live and breathe this stuff, but it's always confusing.
Yeah, I agree.
And sound bites do not a good explanation make.
No.
And so I think that your challenge will be convincing your electorate that the 9 mil continual renewal is not going to increase their taxes.
Right. Yep, that's definitely the challenge.
Well, it's a reduction factor. You know, the law says because these are operating levies, they are only allowed to collect approximately what they collected the year before.
Mm-hmm.
So if the tax the tax on an individual home may go up a smidge because the tax on the commercial property next door went down a smidge because the law looks at the tax revenue as an aggregate. So it looks at what is that levy, what is that foreign levy bringing in to the school district with residential, commercial, and public utility all combined. So it looks at that full value at that rate and what do they bring in. So the next year, they've got to bring in about that same amount. But did residential values go down a smidge? Did industrial go up a smidge? So there's that play in there. So while an individual homeowner or a farm may see a slight increase in their tax, the business down the road or the butcher shop up the street may see a slight decrease because of their commercial class of business. So again, it's not an individual homeowner necessarily. It's the aggregate of the tax district. The taxing district, being the school system, can only collect approximately what they collected the year before as an aggregate. So again, it's confusing, but either way, I just wanted to offer my services and try to explain in as concise a way as possible. Okay. But I will have that for you tomorrow with those TPP figures entered into that certification.
Okay, so you've got the certified resolution there.
And I have a resolution.
Okay.
Great.
I've got it.
Okay.
She signed it.
All right.
So I'm good.
Fantastic.
That's excellent.
Thank you. All right. So next up on the agenda then, I need a motion to approve the resolution pursuant to Section 570521 of the revised code submitting to the electors of the Marysville Exempted Village School District the question of renewal of two existing tax levies as a single tax levy for the purpose of current expenses.
It says three.
That's... If you're looking on board docs, that's our...
I am not. I'm looking on my hard
copy. Current agenda. It's two.
It's on.
It's two. We passed the resolution for two to start with. So now we're doing it.
For two.
For two.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, moved in second. Again, that is for the combined nine mils, just so everybody's clear. Any other discussion on this? Hearing none, then, can I have a roll call, please?
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
And Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. All right, next up, I need a motion to approve the board policy revision amendments. That would be policy IKF for the graduation requirements. I need a motion to accept that, please.
So moved.
I will second that. Move in second. You want to touch on that,
please? For some reason, I can't open my attachment, so I'll talk through it from memory a little bit. In essence, with the graduate class of 2014, there are additional requirements. The district has made those provisions. But there is one opportunity that we can provide for students to opt out of the Algebra 2 and the Advanced Science credit. Coursework has not been developed for an Algebra 2 or its equivalent at this point for some of our students in special ed categories and for some of our students who are part of the PACE program. And it's when students entered high school, so we also have some students who have accelerated and are trying to graduate this year, but there was a misunderstanding somewhere that they would fall under the seniors class graduation requirements. However, they follow the year they entered school, which they would still have to get those two credits. So what this policy allows you to do is opt out of that. In our conversation with Yvonne and the high school principal and high school guidance counselors, we're only interested in keeping this policy for about 2 years so we can make some instructional programming decisions to get people where they need to be and actually take the coursework they need to be on track with everyone else.
Okay. Any questions, discussion on that? Okay, everybody understands. Can I get a roll call, please?
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mr. Maiden.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up, I need a motion to... Oh, I'm sorry. I need a motion to approve the superintendent action items, obviously with the changes, and those include the addendum you have as well. So I need a motion to approve all of those, please.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Ms. Mank.
Does anyone else get messed up when Cindy switches the agenda item? And
yes.
No, it's just hard to get used to. Certainly, want to take a couple minutes and talk about resignations and retirees. We have several on this month. For people who have found opportunities outside of the school district, certainly want to wish them well on their new opportunities, and definitely sad to see them go, but glad that they were able to find other opportunities. I think several of them have been here, some for quite some time, and just want to take the opportunity to recognize the service they've given to our students and wish them well as they move forward. Other than that, it's pretty standard for my several donations again. But that's it on my part.
Okay. Are there any comments, questions from the board?
No.
All right.
I'll just second. I appreciate. It's sad to see people resigning and or retiring, and I'll just second your comments. Appreciate their work.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that list, every one of them, they're good people. I mean, you hate to lose good people. So, but we do wish them luck in there wherever they're off to. So. All right, any further discussion? If not, then I need a roll call, please.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
Mrs. Powers.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Beatty.
Yes. Motion carries. All right. Really, just comments, questions from the board. Mrs. Powers, I'll start with you. Any final comments, questions?
I would just say thank you to all the people also who have given the school district service and wish them the best of luck.
Mr. Lassiter?
No,
okay. Mr. Greer?
Well, this is my only comment would be it's nice to see every month we have so many volunteers supporting our district and with their time and then these donations, mm-hmm. monetary donations. Mm-hmm. So,
Ms. Devine?
I feel like I've made lots of comments tonight already. Maybe just about the levy, you know, encouraging people to get involved with the levy, and whether you're on the committee or not, please help spread the word.
I would second that. I mean, if this levy is critical, and I know there's a lot of things going on in this district, but that levy is critical to pass in May. Mm-hmm. So tell everyone you know.
Right. And don't be afraid to ask questions.
Absolutely.
I guess that's the other thing, you know, please don't be misinformed.
Absolutely. Ms. Mankins, any final comments?
I think that's the same thing. I mean, moving forward, we know now that it's a 9 mil continuing from here on out. Chris Schmink and Kenny Chapin, who are the committee chairs, will be presenting as a part of the superintendent's report and giving you an update monthly of the levy campaign and the things that are happening. Next week, we have our first committee meeting, the interior smaller group. The focus is identifying individual positive voters and building the capacity of each one of those committees. As you know, last time many of those committees ran with one person, and the goal is to get 10 people on each committee. So we've kind of
that would be great.
Yeah.
Laid that out in a framework.
Yeah.
Yesterday, and so pleased with the direction we're moving forward. February, again, we'll be sharing the reductions that will be a
down as a result of a levy failure. And Cindy, once again, that number would be, where do we have to get to?
Just under a million.
I catch you off guard.
Yeah, you did.
For reduction?
The reductions were
just under a million.
Just a little about a million to make it through for next year.
Which is another significant
number. Yeah. Yeah, this million will be, I mean, we thought that the last 2 million were painful, the next million would be
more. Cindy, you got any final comments? Okay. Then I need a motion to move into executive session then, please.
Second. Oh, Tracy.
Moved and second. Roll call, please. Amy moved. Tracy second.
Okay.
Technology.
Mrs. Powers.
Yeah.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Beatty.
Yes.
Mrs. Devine.
Yes.
And Mr. Laster.
Yes.
Okay, we are in executive session at 9:08. There will be no action taken after we get out of executive session.